Hello and welcome to this week's Green Shoots, a history of Irish football. Coming up on the podcast this week, we are with the Republic of Ireland as they look to qualify for Euro 2000. Don't forget to share the show on your own social media channels to let more people find out about the history and heritage of Irish football. And why not share your stories about it while you're at it? Turn on notifications on whatever podcast platform you use so that you get notified straight away when a new episode drops. So, Gary, the last time we delved into the Irish football team, we had lost out by just a tad to a very good Belgian side who went on to the FIFA World Cup in 1998 in France. But I suppose after that campaign, then we're on to Euro 2000 qualifiers at the end of 1998, September 1998. What kind of place is the Irish team in at the moment? What were people talking about, I suppose, in the run up to the Euro 2000 qualifiers with this team, perhaps with the manager as well, after his first campaign?
Well, I think there was, as we talked about the previous campaign, there was a little bit of disappointment. I mean, given the group we had, the minimum expectation was to reach the playoffs. Now, we did well against Belgium, but we just missed out. Okay, we were one goal away from going through. We had had some good young players starting to come through. The likes of Damien Duff, Robbie Keane, Shea Given had all been capped at this stage. Maybe we didn't realise how good they were going to be. The other great hope at the time was that Brian Kerr's under-16s and under-18s had won UEFA tournaments. They'd been European champions, and that didn't come around too often. So there was hope for the future. We started off thinking the group wasn't too bad. We were third seeds. We were the top-ranked of the third pot. So we had hopes of qualifying for Holland and Belgium. It was close by. It would have been a great trip for fans and everything.
Who's in our group then? Group 8 for the Euro 2000 qualifying tournament?
They were called, I think, at that stage, FR Yugoslavia. So the former Republic of Yugoslavia? Yeah. So, I mean, at that stage, Yugoslavia, or what was Yugoslavia, much of it had broken up. So, I mean, obviously, Croatia were a different country, and they were also in the group. We want to talk about that. But the likes of Macedonia, who were also in the group, were independent.
It's just a Balkan connected collection.
Yeah, a Balkan collection, exactly. Bosnia and Herzegovina had also broken away, if I remember correctly. So it was still what's now Serbia. Montenegro was still part of Yugoslavia, if I remember correctly. And of course, Kosovo was still part of the Republic as well. So we had Yugoslavia in our group. We had Croatia in the group, who between the draw and kicking a ball went to the 1998 FIFA World Cup and caused a bit of a sensation. I mean, they hammered Germany. They got to the semi-finals, a bit unlucky not to knock out France, the eventual winners, and earned a bronze medal. They finished third in the World Cup.
I remember I think Davor Suker as well had the absolute tournament of his life.
They were hugely, hugely impressive team. I actually saw them beat Romania and Bordeaux, and I'm pretty sure he scored the goal that day as well. Yeah. They became, from maybe being not too bad with obviously lots of talent, to suddenly, hang on, we've got the third best team in the world in our group as well. And Macedonia, well, we weren't too happy to see Macedonia again, given what had gone on in the last campaign when they'd beaten us 3-2. So it wasn't pretty good to draw them again. And the minnows in the group were Malta, who were expected to be the whipping boys. And, well, eventually it proved like that, but that's another story. But
I suppose when you're looking at that group at the start, though, bar Malta, that's a very tricky group. That's a tough group. Yugoslavia, Croatia, Macedonia to play home and away.
Yeah, it was. And now, I mean, I suppose the little advantage we did have in it was particularly tricky for them, because they were all local derbies and you had your own local rivalries. And some of them maybe we didn't fully understand at the time, but certainly we were fully aware that Yugoslavia, Croatia were going to be two massive games and huge games. And as far as they were concerned, they were the two biggest games in the group. But with the top team to qualify, there was a chance. I think the best runner-up would have gone directly to the tournament, but all the other runners-up had a playoff. But so second place to get a playoff. I think when the draw was made, we'd been reasonably happy with it. But maybe after the 98 World Cup, we had to take stock and say it could be a really difficult group.
Yeah, absolutely. And it starts in September 1998 as well, at home to that Croatian side. It's an interesting kind of game. Did we make a bit of a roaring start?
Yeah, so I mean, it was Croatia. They were a huge draw, obviously, total sellout crowd, although all the games were sold out in those days. They were actually missing Davor Šuker. They were missing three attacking key players, so that was certainly an advantage. But it was going to be a really tough game. Now, we made an incredible start. It was right from the first whistle. The team had gone out. They were really up for it. They took the game by the scruff of the neck, got a penalty after 4 minutes. Dennis Irwin dispatched it. Roy Keane headed home after about 15 minutes. We were totally on top and two up. Now, we couldn't maintain that pace. No side could maintain the start and the pace. And Croatia definitely came back into it. Boban started to run the game and they had chances, but we defended really well. They had a couple of players sent off in the second half as well. They finished with nine men, but I mean, we were already two up at that stage. So it was a really, really impressive performance. And one of the great, maybe a little bit forgotten as opposed to games like the Dutch game or Spain 89. It's probably not talked about up at that level, and possibly because of the way the campaign ended. But that was to play the team that had finished third in the world. Certainly the first competitive game after the World Cup. Okay, maybe did a little bit of a hangover, but we beat them 2-0 in a very, very impressive win.
Mm. Perhaps maybe because as well, it was the first game of the group as well, and I suppose at that very early stage, there isn't that much riding on it in terms of whether or not you get into playoff, whether or not you win the group. So maybe that's why it's kind of slipped under the radar a bit. But it is a great win against a very, very good Croatia side. So then we go to October then, 1998. We play Malta at Lansdowne Road, and as you might guess, it's pretty much a formality.
It shouldn't have been our first game in October because we were scheduled to go to Belgrade to play Yugoslavia. But there was a war on at the time. The game got cancelled at fairly short notice. So the game got postponed. So as you said, then we went down to play Malta 4 days after we were due to play Yugoslavia. We beat them 5-0, a couple of goals from Robbie Keane, Roy Keane, Niall Quinn, Gary Breen. Very straightforward, facile win, as expected. Croatia had hammered them 4-1 a few days earlier in Valletta. It was as expected that we picked up the points. Croatia made hard work of beating Macedonia the same night. They were a goal down and then they were pegged back to 2-2, and they needed a winner 20 minutes from time to beat them in Zagreb. So I think that was Macedonia just sending notice that they were going to be in the mix as well. They'd already hammered Malta in September. So, but at that stage, we had 6 points out of six, and the Yugoslavia game got rescheduled for November, a month after it was originally meant to be played.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you mentioned that as well, because for Croatia, Macedonia, Yugoslavia, etc., they're playing this in, yeah, I suppose, in the specter of war, in the shadow of war as well, too. So with the Balkans kind of war going on and the breakup of Yugoslavia and all of these kind of countries trying to separate from each other down there. So it was really a I suppose off the pitch, it was a troubling time for those three states.
Yeah, so just to put it in context, the Croatian war had ended. So Croatia was an independent state, and Macedonia was an independent state at that stage. But Belgrade was being bombed, and I remember on my only visit to Kosovo, I went to Kosovo just before COVID to see our under-21s play. And the guy who ended up driving me, still have his number, I messaged him a couple of times. He was telling, because I got talking about the trip to Macedonia. We'll go on and talk about that. But he was telling me at that time that Kosovo was in the midst of a war. And I think he was 18 or 19 at the time, and he'd been rounded up with his family and put on a train, and he didn't know if they were going to come off the train alive. There was all sorts of rumors. And at the time, I was 20, 30 miles away watching football. And it does put things in perspective. But certainly what is now Serbia and what is now Kosovo was certainly in the mix of a war. Belgrade was being bombed in October 98. So it was an incredibly tense time.
Playing in the specter of war for FR Yugoslavia. So we beat Malta 5-0. We're on then to having to play Yugoslavia away then in November. Is this in Belgrade or what happens?
Yeah, it's in Belgrade. I mean, they subsequently, I think, had to play outside. I think they had to play after this outside of Belgrade for a while, but they were still in Belgrade for this campaign. There were certainly European games moved to Hungary. I think the national team had to move briefly as well, but it was in Belgrade. We actually played really well. We were level at halftime, and deservedly so. We had a very, very strong shout for a penalty 8 minutes into the second half. The goalkeeper appeared to bring down Jason McAteer. Predrag Mijatovic then put them ahead on the 64th minute. And we had plenty of chances to equalise. And Mark Kinsella's goal-bound shot was blocked by the arm of a Serbian defender. And again, the whole Irish team were screaming for a penalty, and the Swedish referee didn't give either penalty. And it was certainly one that Mick felt we were hard done by, but Yugoslavia ended up with the points and a 1-0 win. No disgrace, and an impressive performance against an obviously very talented side.
Carl Erik Nielsen was the referee. So we're looking at you, Carl, for that one. but was there any fears, safety fears for the Irish team going to Yugoslavia?
There was fears. I mean, I actually didn't go, and it wasn't over safety. It was over work with the short notice. I'd already a business trip. I didn't even see the game on TV. I was actually in the south of France for work. And I was excusing myself from dinner every 10 or 15 minutes, I think, to make phone calls to ask my father how the game was going. So I didn't get to watch it till I got home. But because there was no way out of that, the match was scheduled at short notice. There was absolutely no way I could have changed anything. And not only was I not there, but certainly, I mean, I know friends of mine were there. Fans still traveled. But there were some concerns. Now, the bombing had actually stopped at that stage, but it was still, I mean, it was still a country at war. So I suppose even looking back, it's surprising the games were allowed to take place there.
We roll on and we go back to June 1999 then is our next home game, next game in the group, and that's against Macedonia. It's a tight scoreline. Was it a tight game?
Yeah, no, it's probably one we deserve to win, but it's one with a caveat. So Niall Quinn got the only goal in the second half. We were the better team and we had chances, but they defended very well. They kept it to 1-0, and then typical with about 15 minutes to go, they threw the kitchen sink at us, and they hit the with 10 minutes to go, they hit the bar, And I mean, if that had gone in, they'd probably have got a draw. And they gave us scares in the last few minutes. We were certainly celebrating at the final whistle and hugely relieved to get over the line and get the 1-0 win. Now, we probably deserved it, but we could have been caught by a sucker punch. And, well, it was only 2 years on from the horrors of the 3-2 defeat. So Macedonia was still a dirty word at the time.
was that kind of similar to the 3-2 where they kind of locked us off for the game, and then all of a sudden the last 10-15 minutes they really went for us, and then obviously got the rewards in the 3-2, but not obviously in the 1-0. But was that kind of, I suppose, similarly to how they played against us? They kind of held us off for a long period, and then the last 15 minutes they just kind of went for it.
Oh, my memory was that they'd scored earlier than that. Now, I know we took the lead early on in Skopje, but I think they had gone 2-1 up, 3-1 up, and certainly scored in the first half. And then, I think 97 was just an awful performance. It was just a shocking result. Everything, just about everything went wrong, including Jason McAteer's red card. So it's...
What should I not have brought it up, basically, is what you're saying, I think.
It just brings back painful memories. Now, another thing to mention, actually, was that, again, it wasn't meant to be our only game, that Macedonia game. We were meant to have played Yugoslavia a few days earlier in Dublin, but that game got cancelled again because of the war.
Oh.
So the war was playing havoc with the fixtures in the group, and that game had to be slotted in to a September window. So we ended up playing three games in September.
Well, how does that kind of work? Was it a negotiation? Did they say, sorry, can we change this? And was there a bit of a rigmarole, or did everybody kind of understand, you know, there's a war going on? Yeah, that's fine. We'll make it. We'll find a space for it somewhere.
Well, I think they didn't have much choice. I mean, the game got cancelled at reasonably short notice. I mean, we certainly had, I had my tickets. It was paper tickets in those days. And I mean, I was living in Dublin, and we had floodlights at that stage. So it wasn't a great inconvenience as opposed to having an away game cancelled. Mm. But it was quite close enough to the game from what I can remember. And then it took a while to get it scheduled, but they really didn't have much option because qualification was finishing in October. The playoffs were in November. So they just had to fit it in at the start of the September window. And so we were meant to be playing on a Saturday and a Tuesday, I think the Malta game was. And we just played the Wednesday before. Sorry, when it was Wednesday in Malta as well. But we played the Wednesday before in Dublin before heading off to Croatia. And they just had to fit the game in.
Mm. And that also meant that we had to play a game on the 1st of September, the 4th of September and the 8th of September. So three kind of games right one after the other with not much of a break in between. So 9th of June 1999, we beat Macedonia 1-0, and then it's to September, the 1st of September 1999, and we have to play that game against Yugoslavia. How does this one kind of turn out? Because it looks like it was a very interesting game.
Yeah, and maybe another forgotten game. I mean, I talked about the Croatia game, and this one, it was a humdinger of a game. It was a great game. They were a really good side, and it was a real, especially the second half was real end to end. Robbie Keane put us in front about 9 minutes into the second half. Dejan Stankovic, he equalised a few minutes later, and Well, Mark Kennedy won it with an absolute screamer of an effort from about 25 yards into the top corner, into the south terrace. And part of the reason I remember it is because the guy behind me had been abusing Mark Kennedy for the whole game. And
so, of course, he scored the wonder goal of his career.
He scored the wonder goal of his career. And I said, are you happy with him now? You know, so it's... I actually thought he'd had a decent enough game as it was, but obviously to score such a fantastic goal. And it was a great win. And at this stage, Yugoslavia had already drawn nil all at home against Croatia, and Croatia had dropped points in Macedonia. So it put us in a very, very strong position in the group going to Croatia. And, well, obviously going to Malta and going to Macedonia as well. But we were in pole position in the group at this stage.
And just to put to, you're talking about that Yugoslavia team, and I've just looked up the team sheet as well, and they do have some great players. You've got Stankovic, Mijatovic, Milosevic, Savicevic, Mihailovic, and then you've got the likes of Kovacevic on the bench as well. Perhaps not too many people would be, unless you're a bit of a football nerd, might know too many of those names, but they were a really, really good side with some really good players, top
players playing at top clubs, Madrid's, Real Madrid's, Lazio, Porto. I mean, top players. I mean, Dragan Stojkovic, he's the current manager of Serbia now, Pixie. I mean, he was one of the stars of the 1990 World Cup. He was still playing in that campaign. And so you're talking about top players at the time.
And that Croatian team, as you mentioned, is kind of the same. They just had great players, and they were playing at some really good clubs around Europe as well. And speaking of Croatia, we've got to go away to Zagreb 3 days later in September 1999. It looks like a really, really tight affair.
Yeah, I mean, I felt we definitely deserved a point in Belgrade at least, and we had those two very, very strong penalty shouts. Croatia was one of those kick in the teeth kind of games. We defended. Now, it was backs to the wall, but it was very intelligent defending. It wasn't kind of riding our luck. We defended really, really well against top players like Boban, Sukar, etc. again. The game ticked into injury time, and Croatia, for all their skill and everything, they couldn't break us down. And with the game almost up, they hoof a long ball from their own half, is what I remember, into our box. And just Davor Suker got in the end of it and scored. And I mean, I suppose the frustrating thing about it was we lost to a British goal. We lost to a goal we should have been able to defend. We should have been able to head it clear. And we lost so late. It was a real kick in the teeth, an absolute sickener.
Well, I mean, you call it a British goal. We scored enough goals like that too in the childhood era. And might I add, most recently in Hungary, the winner was where that came from too. So
yeah, no, okay, that is a very, very good point.
You would outsin cast the first stone, Mr. Spain.
Yeah. So yes, but what I would say in my defence is the quality of players that Croatia had on the pitch, and the ability, the technical ability they had, that they would have scored over their career so many top class goals. They would have picked you apart with a pass. They would have stuck one in the top corner from 20 yards. We were beaten by a long ball over the top. And I suppose the manner of the goal and how late it was scored was a real kick in the teeth. But touche, fair comment. We've scored a lot of those ourselves.
Absolutely, yeah. Perhaps we need it again for the game against Malta too, because we had to go away to Malta 3 or 4 days later, September 8th, 1999. This looks like, what's the best way to describe it? Get out of jail free?
Yeah, it was definitely, look, and it was the third game in a week, and we weren't used to playing three high profile. So it all started so easily. We were two up in 20 minutes, just in total control. Game was over, went in at half time, and they came up, probably definitely took our foot off the gas. They came out in the second half, scored a couple of goals just after the hour, and then it was absolute panic mode. And well, Steve Staunton, what a player. I know he got vilified as a manager, but he saved our bacon that day with a peach of a free kick. And we got out of jail. We got the 3 points. And the 3 points were absolutely crucial, because it looked like it was setting us up for qualification the way the group had panned out. So even though we'd lost in Croatia, it was by no means fatal, given that we had to go to Macedonia on the last day, just a point behind Yugoslavia, and they had to go to Croatia, and we were a point ahead of Croatia. So it looked like a win in Macedonia would probably be enough to get us to the Euros, top the group, because certainly there was no way Croatia were doing Yugoslavia any favours. there was some very, very stupid people in Ireland thinking they'll carve it up, and said, absolutely no way. This is...
Obviously, haven't paid attention to the news for the past 5 years.
this is the old firm. This is... there is pure rivalry. I don't even want to get into the whole war stuff. But even today, there is absolutely no love lost between Serbia and Croatia. And certainly neither of them would have been doing each other any favours. And they had to fight for their own. I mean, Croatia needed a win to get at least a playoff. Croatia really needed to win the game to have any chance. I think they actually had to win the game, realistically, to have any chance of staying in the tournament. Yugoslavia knew a win would put them to the tournament and a draw would guarantee them at least a playoff. Well, we were playing in Macedonia at the same time, knowing a win would put us in a very strong position and it would mean qualification.
Yeah, I think...
Unless...
From what I remember, I think it was Croatia... I think Croatia absolutely had to win and hope that Macedonia beat us, hope that we didn't get a result, any kind of result in Macedonia or something along those lines, that whatever way it panned out, they needed us to not get anything from the match in Macedonia for them to have a chance of jumping up into that playoff spot. So the Croatia Yugoslavia game, I suppose we'll take that first, because that was a massive game for them, and they draw 2-2.
Yeah, so Croatia take the lead. Alan Boksic, another great player we didn't really talk about. Fantastic player. He gave them the lead. Yugoslavia came back and led 2-1 at one stage. Your man Predrag Mijatovic, he was at Real Madrid at the time. Mm. Dejan Stankovic put them ahead, but another great player, Mario Stanic, another talented, he equalized early in the second half for Croatia, and it finished 3-2. They were pressing for the winner, but they couldn't get it. So that result had gone right for Ireland, and obviously was going on at the same time as we were playing in Skopje.
The final result was 2-2, was it?
The final result was 2-2.
Yeah, okay.
So there were no further goals from the 47th minute. So that was the ideal result for us. And that meant if we won in Skopje, we were through to Euro 2000. And I should point out, we were up against a Macedonian team that were missing 8 of their first choice 11. So we were the hottest of hot favourites to win the game. And...
Well, you know what that means, don't you?
Well, we're never good as favourites, and it still rankles. I mean,
talk to us about the game. I suppose first of all, what was the game like? Were we pressing? Were we good, or was it a nervy affair?
No, we battered them. We scored. Niall Quinn scored after 18 minutes. We should have been 3 up at half time. We went out in the second half and we were tearing them to bits. Mark Kennedy was ripping them apart. I don't know how we didn't get the second goal. And I think they started. Certainly, there was questions about Mick McCarthy's management of this game as well, because with about 10 minutes to go, we seemed to go 4-5-1. We seemed to batten down the hatches. And we got a couple of scares. They had a goal disallowed. Alan Kelly had to make a fantastic save. And the second one was from a corner that nobody challenged. So it was a free header. And then, even still, it looked like we'd ridden it out. We had qualified. And in virtually the last touch of the game, they got a corner. And Gordon Stavresky, I still remember his name and it still haunts me. And he rose unchallenged and powered a header into the net from 6 yards. And I talked about the goal we gave away in Zagreb. Well, this was just basic defending from a corner. You know, it's clear a corner and we're at the Euros. Oh, it was, I'd probably say, and I said it before, it's probably the lowest I've ever felt coming out of a Republic of Ireland game, given that we were so close to qualifying. We were so much the better team for 80 minutes of the game. And we just got it so wrong at the end. It was a real kick in the teeth. And the other thing I remember is that the home fans, and there weren't that many home fans at the game. It was still a very tense time. There was war on 20 miles up the road. But and there were a lot of refugees in Skopje at the time. But the home fans started chanting, Yugoslavia, Yugoslavia, in celebration that Yugoslavia had qualified. And it was kind of feeling, well, there's no doubts where their loyalties lie in the former Yugoslavia anyway. So,
yeah, and I suppose when you look back at it, was Mick McCarthy just trying to hold on to what we had and felt that if we kind of maybe push forward a bit too much, that we were going to leave ourselves open yet again to another Macedonian kind of embarrassment or something like that? Was he just trying to shut up shop?
Yeah, he was probably trying to shut up shop, but Mark Kennedy had a really good game as well. Was he the right player to take off? I don't know. You know, it kind of encouraged them to come on to us because they'd looked a poor side. We should have just got the second goal and put them away. And
I suppose it's the psychology of it as well. If you're looking for a goal as well in a game and you see your opponent switch to maybe 4-4-5-1 or certainly something that looks quite defensive, you kind of think to yourself, well, hold on a second, they're going to start dropping back now, they're just going to try and so our opportunity is here. And it sounds like they took their chance, albeit with poor Irish defending.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably it. They only came at us in the last 10 minutes and then they had the crowd up, they had the goal said disallowed, they had the great save. I mean, we'd probably be still talking about Alan Kelly's save if the final whistle had gone then. But unfortunately, there was another corner and they scored. And we didn't heed the warnings of not defending a corner. I mean, again, if someone breaks you open with wonderful passing and then sticks one in the top corner, you kind of, like the goal Hungary scored, even though in Budapest, you can still have questioned it, some of the defending for that, but Hungary's second goal was a magnificent goal. If they score a goal like that, you can kind of just put your hands up, but I kind of feel if you don't defend a set piece, if you're getting caught by long balls over the top, that should be the bread and butter for our defenders, and it normally is.
Absolutely, yeah. And it should have been. Unfortunately, that was not. So, what was his name again?
Goran Stavresky.
I'm just trying to rub salt in the wounds. Goran Stavresky.
No, it was... It was just a horror. We were stuck. I was actually flying back after the game and the flight was delayed for hours and we were stuck in Skopje Airport. It had got daylight, I'm pretty sure I remember, before we left. And everything was just absolutely horrible. It was just an...
And as the plane took off, you all said, I hope I never see Macedonia again. So, unfortunately, we missed the chance to... Am I right in saying we missed the chance to top the group and qualify automatically? Is that the...
Yeah. So basically, if the goal... I honestly can't remember if the final whistle had gone in, or if we knew the final whistle had gone in Zagreb. We certainly knew it was 2-2. I think we were certainly, I don't know if we knew for certain that Yugoslavia hadn't got a late winner, but we certainly knew it was 2-2 for quite a while in Zagreb at that stage in the stadium. And there were mobile phones in that stage. There were, there was information coming through. I mean, I go back to previous away games when you're struggling for information, even in Portugal in 95. But by 1999, people had got mobile phones. I had a mobile phone. And so there was information coming through. I honestly can't remember if the final whistle, I have a feeling we didn't hear about the final whistle till after our final whistle, but it kind of just rubbed salt into the wounds. It was just one of those horrible games. And as I said, it's probably the worst moment. It really hurt. It probably even hurt more than the Henri handball. Because it was so close, the game was over. We were there. We were in the finals. We had topped the group, and particularly as Macedonia were so poor, they were missing if you take 8 first choice players out, and Macedonia are a better team now than they were then. You know, they were. I know they'd beaten us 2 years earlier, but that was considered a disaster as well. You know, they hadn't threatened to qualify. So, it was a kick in the teeth, you know.
Yeah, and we were then into the playoffs as well, which would give us our own scars over the past couple of years. I think am I right in saying we've been in 3 or 4 playoffs and won only one for major tournaments?
Well, we started, I'd have to count them. We started in 65 in Paris against Spain. We had 96, sorry, the qualifiers in December 95, I think it was, against the Dutch. We had Belgium. So this was going to be our fourth playoff. And we hadn't won any. Sorry, it was going to be our fifth. Sorry, our fourth. Yes, our fourth playoff. Yeah. And we at that stage, we hadn't won a playoff.
Playoffs are they're not our big friend, are they, in coming into major tournaments? So we're in the draw. Who's in this draw and who do we end up getting?
So the likes of England actually ended up in the draw, Slovenia, Israel, Denmark. So it was an open draw. It was a two-legged playoff, and we ended up drawing Turkey, which it wasn't the worst. Scotland were in the draw as well, actually. It wasn't the worst draw, but was by no means the best. We certainly weren't too happy drawing Turkey. It was a difficult draw. I mean, they'd missed out in qualifying to Germany, but they'd beaten Germany at home and drawn in Munich. Now, having said that, the draw in Munich did put the Germans through, so they only needed a scoreless draw. But still, it was a decent Turkish side. And I suppose we weren't happy with the draw. It was a tough game. And the feeling was still there. We'd left it behind us in Skopje.
Yeah. And it just, again, talking about that Turkish team, they had, again, if you're a little bit of a nerd, football nerd, they had the likes of Hakan Süker and Sergen Yalcin and stuff like that. So they did have some good quality around the pitch too. So this was a good Turkish team, as you mentioned. They'd beaten Germany as well. So this was a good Turkish team to be taken seriously.
We should maybe look back in hindsight as well, because this Turkish team, they were a very good side. They went to the Euros. They beat Belgium at home, if I remember correctly, in Brussels in the Euros. They did a lot of damage. They were a good side in the Euros. And then they went to the 2002 World Cup, and they got to the semi-finals they reached?
I think so, yeah.
So it was a very, very talented Turkish side. So we mightn't have, as you mentioned, they had some top players as well. And first leg in Dublin, but we were still on a little bit of a downer. It was a great game, and we took the lead with 11 minutes to go with a goal from Robbie Keane. Now, the feeling was we definitely needed to take a lead to Bursa. They had actually moved the second leg to Bursa as well, which was quite awkward to get to, but that's another story. So we took the lead in the 79th minute through Robbie Keane. And unfortunately, a few minutes later, Lee Carsley handled the ball in the box and they got a penalty and they equalised. And with the away goals rule in place, we talked about so many 1-1 victories that we had, but we lost 1-1 in Skopje and we definitely lost 1-1 to Turkey in Lansdowne Road.
I suppose that's that penalty then is a bit of a killer. We don't take any lead to Turkey. They've got an away goal as well. You mentioned trying to get to Bursa in Turkey. Did you go? How difficult was it to get there?
It was very difficult. So, I mean, we've brought incredible crowds everywhere. Yeah. And now we ended up with only about 150 fans in Bursa. Tickets, everyone actually had spare tickets going. So we were on the flight out of Dublin the following morning. And they gave us whatever we wanted for tickets, and we went. We flew out the following morning on a plane full of Turkish fans, actually. We actually promised tickets to some of them, because many of their fans that had traveled from Turkey to Dublin weren't able to get a ticket for Bursa. So, because it was played in the small, I mean, the stadium has been redone there, but I think the attendance was only something like 18,000, but that was totally full apart from the away end, and it was totally sold out. So you had to fly to Istanbul, and then you had to go overland. Now, Turkey had unfortunately been hit by an earthquake at that stage as well, so they were still recovering from that. People had been killed. Transport infrastructure wasn't great. So we ended up getting, it was very much planes, trains and automobiles, because we ended up in ferry. We got a ferry. We had to get a train. And it seemed to take forever to get to Bursa. And there were actually four of us there, two of us from Limerick and two from Cork. And we were the only Irish fans that went on that route, that went our own way. And we were in Bursa the night before the game. Well, we thought we were the only Irish fans until we bumped into two Iranian Muslims who lived in Germany at the time. And they had started following us during Euro 88, and you bump into them in the next 11 years in various places.
Wow.
And they had made their own way overland as well to Bursa to support us. They had no tickets. They were looking for, now we helped them find a place to stay. We got them into our hotel, actually. Now we had booked in advance, but Jim, my friend, has a good friend who was a travel agent in Cork, and I'm pretty sure she was able to sort out our hotel in advance. That's my memory of how we booked anyway, because the internet bookings were still a bit off in those days, or it wasn't as straightforward, and you were still booking hotels with travel agents and all that. The two lads arrived. There was just the six of us in Bursa. And another thing that happened was the Irish papers, which wasn't too uncommon in those days, if we ended up in a strange place, they'd just write horror stories. And some of it was at the request of the travel agents, and it was a little bit so. There was a four-page spread in the Evening Herald by somebody who'd never been to Bursa about how bad it was, and it was pretty horrendous stuff, and it actually put a lot of people off. But what we didn't realize until the following morning when we arrived in Bursa, and that report had been taken and translated into Turkish and featured in their newspapers.
Ooh.
And I ended up meeting Turkish students.
If you want to, you don't want to do is rile Turkish football fans in any way, shape, or form,
it was even just the Turkish. I mean, it was just wrong. I mean, it was really, really, really wrong. And I mean, it was absolute rubbish. And it was pure, it's a hellhole. It's really dangerous. You'll be attacked. And I mean, course, it was fine. I mean, we were there in the city, and there was actually some university students came up to us who spoke perfect English, and one of them actually had the report in Turkish. And we knew, I mean, we'd seen it and we knew it. And I mean, and if you even looked at it, you could tell they'd never been there. They didn't have any photographs, and they just wrote a load of rubbish. I mean, they wrote it about Tirana in 93 as well, because I remember that. And it was common enough in those days. I mean, plenty of Irish people were going on holidays to Turkey. They did the usual Midnight Express stuff and everything, and just ran a hit piece on Turkey, never expecting it to actually reach Turkey. Mm-hmm. And basically, the message was, don't go unless you're on an organized trip with security, etc. And if I remember rightly, Ray Tracy had a trip that flew in the day of the game. And I think it was the London Supporters Club. There was another trip organized by the London Supporters Club that arrived in the afternoon, because we were the only Irish fans in Bursa that morning. But the students, they were really upset. And no, not at us. They were upset at the stuff in the paper. And as luck would have it, I don't want to name the journalist, he's passed away since, and he wasn't a football journalist. He was actually there. There were actually Irish journalists going in. We were down by the stadium. And I said, if you want to take it up with someone, there's the guy that wrote it. So I made a beeline for him. So
dabbed in. Now, you dabbed him in.
Well, he did, but and I mean, but they were just trying to argue their point and saying they were really, and I mean, and the annoying thing was, he came to us, so lads, it's not as bad as you expected, is it? And I said, well, no, it's sorry, that's not correct. It's not bad at all, and your report was rubbish. But of course, the line in the papers was, Bursa not as bad as expected, you know. So I mean,
well, I mean, don't write a piece like that and then turn up to the place as well. I mean, what were you thinking?
I know, so, and I mean, but I mean, it was actually quite common in those days that you would have, maybe it was the travel agent supplying the info or something like that, but you'd have a hit piece on the place and then say, oh, it's too dangerous to go there, you know? And I mean, there were loads of Irish people going to these countries on holidays. The Department of Foreign Affairs weren't saying it's too dangerous to go, you know. It's and I mean, even Albania in 93, it was, I mean, it was a poor country and they were just coming out. Look, they were ravaged. They obviously suffered a lot under Hoxha, but the people were lovely and charming.
Absolutely.
Yeah. They were really friendly. There was nobody in any danger. And
I think, like, so we actually went on a family holiday to Turkey in probably in the early 2000s or something like that. So not long after after this. And it's a fantastic country, beautiful country, and so many people just really welcoming and want you to see, I suppose, the best parts of their country, the culture, the music and so on. I thought it was a fantastic place to go, and Turkey is a beautiful place to go. It's filled with thousands of years of history as well, too, in that corner of the world, Constantinople, etc.
I've brought both my children at different stages to Istanbul, and then we've done the sites and tours, and it's incredible. There's incredible history there, incredible scenery, incredible food, and I'd highly recommend going there. And I've been to Antalya as well, been to Bursa, obviously, been to Istanbul a few times. So
just to point out, this podcast is not sponsored by the Turkish Tourist Board or anything like that. Yeah, you can if you want.
Well, yes. Go on.
But there was a football match to be played there as well. But unfortunately, it didn't go our way. But how did the game pan out then? How did we play?
Well, I suppose, again, we were one goal away from qualifying. We actually had suffered quite a few injuries. I mean, I know Dean Kiley had to play in goal because Alan Kelly was out. Shea Given wasn't available. Steve Staunton was out, I think. We were missing quite a few players for the game as well. It didn't really, I mean, it finished 0-0. It was what they needed we didn't really have any chances. Now, they didn't. Dean Kiely had to make a couple of saves, but they didn't really open us up either. And I suppose as it went into the last 10 or 15 minutes, you kind of felt there was always a chance if we couldn't just nick a goal. Mm. But we didn't ever really look like scoring. And it was one of those just nil-nil games. And even though we were knocked out on away goals over the two legs, I would have to hold my hand up and say the better team went through. It's not one that you really could talk too much about, a hard luck story. And even in Belgium, where you could say maybe the better team won, there was doubts over the throw-in when they got their winning goal. We could have scored a goal that would have put us through. Mm. But I think the Turkey won, even though it was two draws, they didn't beat us. They, over the two legs, I think they did deserve to qualify. And even though they were a goal away from going out, they were comfortable enough, and it wasn't as if even in the last 10 or 15 minutes that we were battering the door down and just couldn't get in. It was just, I think we lost it in Skopje. That's the reality. That was our chance. And even though we went out and away goals, the better team did qualify for the finals.
So another playoff comes and another playoff goes, and we are left sitting at home watching another major championship as well. That old perennial thing that seemed to come up all the time, the playoffs, haunted by them at this stage. So then it was on to the qualifiers for the 2002 World Cup after that. As well, and we'll get onto that in a later podcast. But I suppose, Gary, at the end of this qualifying campaign, then where is this Irish team, and where is Mick McCarthy? There's two major campaigns gone, two playoff defeats, and we're not going to any major tournaments.
Yeah, so Mick was definitely under pressure at this stage. I think there's no doubt about that. He would have been feeling the pressure. Feeling was we had done well at underage. We had won at the UEFA under 16, the UEFA under 18. We had real hope for the future. We'd already brought through the likes of Robbie Keane, Damien Duff, Shay Given. So the feeling was there was a lot of talented players there. But Mick, he'd had two campaigns. It hadn't worked out. He was taking some of the flack for the results as well. You're done in the 90th minute twice in a month. I mean, it's real kicking the teeth stuff, but they were avoidable goals in both Croatia and Macedonia. So Mick was a man under pressure as we went into the new century, the new millennium, from 99 into 2000, looking to qualify for Korea, Japan.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll take that up in a podcast as well coming up in the next couple of weeks too. Gary, as ever, thank you for bringing us through that journey as well for the Euro 2000 qualifiers as well. And you can pick up your money from the Turkish Tourism Board, I suppose, once you're finished recording this podcast. Yeah,
absolutely. I would just send them a copy and look for it retrospectively. So.
And they'll send you back the copy of that report and go, no. Gary, as ever, thank you very much, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Thanks, Kevin.
Well, that's it for this week's episode. Coming up next week, we'll be taking a look at the legendary Irish player Tom Bud Ahern as Gary talks about his international career, and we'll also talk to a Luton Town historian about his career there from 1949 to 1957 and why he's still remembered with such fondness at the English League club. Don't forget to share the show on your own social media channels to let more people find out about the history and heritage of Irish football, and why not share your own stories about it while you're at it. And remember, support your local League of Ireland and Northern Ireland Football League clubs. It's our heritage, it's our game. Bye for now.